Please stand up when I call your name and we can acknowledge you. The first is Dan Blackaby, who's a senior assistant librarian in the law library. Sean Bauer, application programmer for Archives in DLA.
I'm glad these folks are working.
Jay Carlson, collections assistant in Washington, East Asia. Ben Ortiz, collection specialist for the Division of Rare Manuscripts. I know he was here yesterday. Adrian Cook, public services assistant, Olin Europe, interlibrary loan services. Catherine Dalgiewicz, the ILGWU project archivist from the Teal Center. She was here yesterday, and I butchered her name yesterday as well. Heather Furness, collection assistant in the Division of Rare. And there, Heather, hey, welcome. Elise Gerasi, research librarian in Capitol Library. I believe Elise came yesterday. Frederica Freddy Lowell, collections assistant in the Division of Rare Manuscripts. I'm really bummed Freddie's not here because I was going to take her picture after. Laura Jones, who is the Archive Senior Administrator in Digital Scholarship and Preservation Services. And Nina Schultz, Digital Resources and Research Services Librarian in the Law Library. Weston Tate, Public Services Assistant in Olin Europe Interlibrary Loan. I think ILL is busy today. And Serena Ward, Acquisition Assistant in the Museum Library. She was here. So in their absence, let's give them all a round of applause. I'd also like to turn to Jim Morris North welcome our colleagues from India. Can you introduce them or ask them to introduce themselves?
Yes, so we have two visitors from Banaras Hindu University and they're getting so comfortable here I'm going to have them introduce themselves.
I'm Dr. A.K. Srivastava. I'm the Chief University Librarian of Banaras Hindu University, Varanasi, India. I'm looking at all libraries of Banaras University Library System, and we have 54 libraries in the university. Four institute libraries we have, 16 faculty libraries, and institutes we have institute Indian Institute of Technology, IIT, BSU, IIM, Indian Institute of Medical Sciences, in BSU, Indian Institute of Agricultural Sciences, in BSU, Indian Institute of Management and other sciences and environmental sciences in the university, and 16 faculties and 140 departments are running here. And all languages, all subjects is being taught there in the Banaras University. And in library, we have collection of central library is 15 million books. We are offering 16,000 online journals. We have rare and massive collection of 10,000 above, which was written on the palm leaf and on food and other things. All the information and knowledge we are having, and we have translated and transcribed, and it is designed and available on web for research. Thank you. And there's one thing for you, thank you. I saw the staff here. I have seen 150 staff. 350 staff are in the Banaras Hindu University Library System. I am a chief of those. Thank you.
Thank you. I am A.Y. Shampayan, basically a professor of genetics and professor in charge of the Agricultural Library of Banaras Hindu University. This is a part of the library that students are in meeting right now. Thank you very much.
I don't think so. I think I am frozen. Near. Oh, wait a minute. There. Okay. As we were looking through the priority objectives for 2011 and 12, and in particular as we were working on the annual report to the provost, major shout out to Ed Weissman for putting that together. We reviewed the 7 goals of the strategic plan, which runs through 2015, and I'm struck anew by how really powerful they are in terms of the directions. I think they're just spot on. And so I want to remind you of them as we think about the particular priorities we've been working on and moving forward. Ensuring access to the full scholarly records for the Cornell community, dramatically improving systems for finding and using scholarly resources, providing services to support the full cycle of research and scholarly exchange, strengthening the educational impact of library programs for students at all levels, undergraduate, graduate, and professional, investing in physical and virtual library spaces, expanding our reach through public engagement, and promoting an organizational culture that helps staff succeed in a changing environment and also embraces a broader engagement with the Cornell community. I think that they're just really wonderful goals for our plan, and I want to congratulate again the architects of the strategic plan for their good work. I also want to turn to the 10 goals of the 10 objectives we had identified for 2011 and 12. Update you briefly on our progress, although the last take one sent you to a link to the annual report, which enumerates the progress that we've been undergoing. I think the teams have done a terrific job of advancing these objectives, and there are other things that have been in play, other activities that have also moved it forward. So the first is to return the library to its position among the top 10 academic institutions in ARL in terms of collection support. We've been doing this in a number of ways. First, we have reallocated internal funds, redirecting some of our reserve funds to support collections. Most of that is one-time funding, and a more modest amount will be ongoing funding to support the collections. We are happy to do this, but I also must point out the provost directed us to do this. So we're good to go on that, and I think we've made good progress, and I know that John and his colleagues in collection development have been sort of thrilled by the having resources to really meet the needs of the faculty across all the disciplines and students as well. We are also pursuing external funding. We have a grant at NEH right now, a challenge grant, to raise money. We should hear about that in December, so not good. And we have designated a campaign within our campaign for collections specifically. We have a campaign goal overall of $60 million. To date, we've raised around $41 million, leaving us around $19 million to raise between now and the end of 2015. Of that amount, $7.5 million is to be raised and earmarked specifically for collections. The total campaign for collections is $15 million. But with the provost and the dean's concurrence, that other half of that funds will be raised specifically by the respective schools and colleges. So that leaves a lot of funds that will go for other things as we move forward. And finally, I think it's really critical that the university understand that for us to remain competitive, we have to have an annual increase in the appropriations for collections. And I think good progress is being made in that area. A third of the faculty signed a petition around that issue of increasing support for collections. Whenever you get a third of the faculty agreeing on something, it's sort of a major day. And the provost is listening and looking at possibilities. This year he actually provided an additional $300,000 to help bridge some needed funds for the collections. So I think we're making making good progress on this. The committee helped identify strategies, and really it falls to me and to Jennifer Sawyer, our Director of Alumni Affairs and Development, to move the campaign forward, for me to continue to pursue internal support from the university, and for John and me and others to think about how best to reallocate resources and meet the emerging needs as well as current needs. The second priority objective is to build, also relates to that first goal of ours of ensuring access to the full scholarly record. And this one is really based on strategic partnerships, looking at how we collectively amongst the research library community can provide access to that full scholarly record that's out there. We have to turn away from thinking about competing with each other in terms of our physical holdings and size to looking at how collectively we can minimize the delta between what scholarly material is out there and what collectively is brought into the community for use right now, but also to preserve and make available for future generations of students and scholars. I think we're making good progress in this area. There are a number of memorandums of understanding that have been signed with Columbia in our Too Cool project. There are some additional MOUs under consideration within the Borrow Direct community. I want to acknowledge particularly Kaiser's work in looking at German studies as a potential collaboration with Princeton and Yale. We will be moving forward more in this area in terms of Borrow Direct, the Ivy Plus, and other partnerships, for instance, land-grant institutions around the country, and also those within New York State. I think the early models are indeed paving the way to broader agreements, and the sort of snowball effect, I think, will be forthcoming. And I think we are we're a good way along for meeting this goal. The third objective relates to our goal two, to dramatically improve systems for finding and using scholarly resources. A lot of work has been going on in this area. In January, we launched the production version of Summit. This coming January, we'll be launching a new catalog search capability based on an open source software, Blacklight, that is being used by our peer institutions, including Columbia. And by July 2013, we'll be launching fully integrated search capabilities across all of the things that we identify as necessary for our faculty and students. Good work is underway. I think there's a lot of synergy around this, and this group will continue to bird dog this issue until July 2013. Obviously, it will also roll into future work as we seek to dramatically improve systems. Priority four, which is to formalize a network of library liaisons to departments and academic programs across the university to strengthen those relations and build expertise to enhance ongoing dialogue with researchers. Serves goal three, to provide services to support the full cycle of research and scholarly exchange. And also goal 10, which is to particularly that portion on broadening engagement with the Cornell community. The priority team has made good work this past year developing a matrix for library liaisons and identifying best practices for their work, surveying other research libraries to see what they are up to and adopting best of breed. We will be working closely with faculty in each of the disciplines to identify what their specific needs is. I know work has been done with humanities departments working through the Olin Europe Humanities Research Collections team, and we'll see similar kind of efforts with social scientists and scientists and research professionals. We're also developing sample language for project descriptions and expectations, and we will align that with a training program so that the liaisons have the requisite knowledge to speak knowledgeably to faculty and researchers about a broad range of issues. One of the concerns that has surfaced immediately is having up-to-date information around issues affecting scholarly communication. And digital production and preservation services, digital scholarship and preservation services under OIA has agreed to develop training programs to support that. The work of this group will be completed by December, and it will be mainstreamed the activities through PSEC and the Reference and Outreach Committee, with the library director's leadership team providing leadership in this learning. Priority 5, partner to develop and implement sustainable economic models for repositories and other sponsored scholarly communication venues that are of high value for researchers, including the most notable ones, the most visible archive and Project Euclid. This priority supports the goal of providing services to support the full cycle of of research and scholarly exchange. And the library has made good progress on several fronts, including establishing a long-term sustainable support model for archives. It's great to announce that after a year's worth of investigation, the Simons Foundation has agreed to support funds up to $350,000 a year over the next 5 years, with the potential for renewal for another 5 years, as challenge funds to encourage the highest institutional users of Archive, which is a worldwide repository, to support it along a model of voluntary contributions over the next 5 years. I'm not sure if this is the latest figure, but I know we have over 123 institutions that have already pledged 5 years support moving forward. So I think we're in really good shape, and I want to acknowledge the wonderful work that OIA and Danielle and David Reddy and others have done to build this model and bring it out. I'm also pleased to say that our partnership with Euclid, with Duke University Press, is doing well. It's been in the black for a number of years, and this year its revenues topped $1 million for the first time. This group is also, these projects have informed our understanding of developing sustainable economic models, and it is helping us in developing a decision support tool to help staff consider, plan, and develop digital library programs with sustainability as a primary objective. Priority 6, to build information literacy programs to achieve college learning outcomes and to develop innovative approaches in partnership with the Center for Teaching Excellence, campus academic technology providers, and college-level centers. This priority supports the goal 4 to strengthen the educational impact of library programs for students at all levels. This year, the team created a Learning at CUL, a roadmap for identifying some of the major goals, objectives, and activities the library will need to pursue over the next 3 years, as well as the relevant stakeholders to bring into this process. We also, in May, hosted an ACRL intensive 3.5-day workshop that focused on all aspects of information literacy. It was very well attended and good response coming out of that. In addition, the library is collaborating with the Center for Teaching Excellence and Academic Technologies to identify the most effective ways to reach out to faculty on information literacy needs. They participated in a workshop in January and offered information literacy modules for the Center's Course Design Institute held both in January and in May. As we move forward, this work will be mainstreamed into the Instruction Committee and the leadership of TSEC and the Library Director's Leadership Team, and we expect in the next year to pilot several programs working closely with college learning outcomes. Priority 7, take the library to its users to increase virtual services and in-person presence of library subject experts in academic units. The library liaison objective also supports this objective, and so the work of the group was really focusing on the virtual services aspects. And this priority really supports Goal 5, to invest in physical and virtual library spaces. There's been progress in a number of key areas. including COR, the Curated List of Library Resources, which is a new virtual library service to enhance discoverability in unit libraries in terms of subject metadata and specialized annotations for particular content that is relevant to particular disciplines. There are three implementations to date for COR, physical science, engineering, and just recently unveiled for entomology. In addition, there's a pilot stack view virtual shelf browsing capability that will be unveiled at the Physical Science Library this fall, which is very much based on the work that Harvard has been doing. And indeed, we are partnering with them to expand the capability in a project called Shelf Life. Meanwhile, there is also work to engage more immediately with faculty and graduate students, and I would point to the program this past spring with librarians, graduate students, departments, and the local section of the American Chemical Society to bring the APS on-campus program here. 100 students attended it, and it included modules on a range of things from peer review process to publishing, resume review, alternative careers, and of course, resources. The work of this team will end in December, but its recommendations will continue to inform the development of our virtual presence. Priority 8, seek partnerships to strengthen Cornell's research environment and enhance opportunities for researchers nationally and globally. This supports our goal 7 to expand the library's research reach through public engagement. And this team has focused on creating an inventory of existing library partnerships and testing two tools. One is a pre-partnership tool to assess the likelihood of successful partnerships. And we'll see if that has any relevance in other parts of our life. The other is to assess the success of existing partnerships. The group is also reaching out to others on campus and elsewhere looking at partnership assessment tools. This team expects to complete its work in December and make its decision-making tools available to the community. I know they're being very keen on that. Priority Objective 9, to adopt common library-wide strategic priorities, policies, practices, and tools for enhancing effectiveness and service, and to promote regular communication and flexible staffing. This priority supports Goal 10 to promote an organizational culture that helps libraries succeed in a changing environment. And the team has focused on creating an inventory across CUL-wide committees, task forces, and working groups to determine which groups involve more than one individual unit or department, and to document their work, their composition, their terms of service. The project will help identify like-minded groups, and the possibility of identifying and unearthing possible overlaps, and help to improve the quality of the committee experience. This winter, staff from Hotel Management and Catherwood created a collaborative culture committee to design and implement an inclusive feedback process for the consolidated staff. And their mission and vision and set of shared values have been vetted and accepted by that staff. This group expects to complete their work by December 12. Its recommendations will inform our work in developing a collaborative culture and flexibility moving forward. Similarly, Priority Objective 10 supports our Goal 10 in the strategic plan. And this group is in the process of creating a prototype of a competency library for CUL positions, which will assist both managers and employees alike in identifying best fits and the opportunities for skill sets to be used and further developed. This group will complete its work in December, but the competency library will help us as we move forward in developing innovative and responsive culture for the library. Okay. Now I'm going to turn to the staff survey and the follow-up that has been underway under the leadership of Managers Council. But first, just roll back to recall that the university's human resources system has determined that they will take on these four areas to develop responses for university-wide kind of work. The first one, in identifying measures for staff, is really focused on career growth. The second one, on workload imbalances, is looking at, you know, this issue of are we doing more with less, but how can we address those issues? The third one, on looking at staff recognition for excellent work, I think is very underway. And the fourth one, to develop and implement supervisory feedback mechanisms, which I think is an excellent idea. I think I mentioned earlier that I sought feedback from my direct reports this year. And I got it, too. But I want to turn now to what the Managers Council has been up to, and just start by acknowledging their good work. They are led at this point by a triumvirate of Bonaventure, Juja Colte, and Ed Weissman, and I thank you for their leadership. This group meets monthly or more frequently as needed, and they have been working hard to, one, first, conduct listening sessions. I also want to acknowledge the Library Forum's willingness to step forward and host one of those listening sessions and have the largest number of folks coming. Actually, the idea came out of one of our all-staff meetings, and I'm very grateful for the Library Forum's level of participation, and we will seek their support as we move forward in this space. The Managers Council looked very carefully and sifted through all of the comments from the listening sessions as well as the Dropbox for comments that came in. And they came up with 10 recommendations. I think it's 10. Yeah, 10. That they want to move forward with first. And these really are directed more towards the senior level of administration, the university librarian and the library executive group. So I'll just read through them, and we'll be reflecting on them as we move forward in terms of how you put meat on these bones to really see changes that are dramatic. The first is to develop and articulate updated, clear vision and mission statements for the library. I'm pleased to be able to report we've made progress on that, and I'll unveil that in a minute. Two, to provide clear rationales for decisions at all levels of management, including how decisions relate back tied to our mission, vision, and stated priorities and strategic planning goals. Three, to explain the rationale for making collection growth a priority and to acknowledge staffing needs that come with increased collection. We will certainly work hard in that area. This will be something that I'm happy to address and will continue to address, as will John Saylor and his group working forward. Three, four, to establish new cultural norms, providing support for managers to, one, work with staff to articulate how their daily activities relate to the library's vision, mission, and priorities. This is a sort of connect the dots, can you find yourself in a pizza kind of idea, the food of pizza. To regularly acknowledge good work, and to communicate ideas from staff to senior managers and vice versa. I assume that applies to managers' council and managers up and down the line. The fifth is to institute more direct interactions between the associate university librarians and the staff, and not just the staff in their units, but those more broadly, and this is a watch the space. Six, the university librarians, the associate university librarians, and managers should emphasize the importance of core services in their communications. Seven, to hold a library-wide conversation on how to do less with less. It's a brilliant idea, and more on that in a minute. Eight, to optimize the committee structure and clearly define committee responsibilities. Nine, to reevaluate and clarify what decisions are made at what levels. I think that's a great idea. And 10, provide opportunities for staff to deepen their expertise. So, in response to one of these recommendations, but also thinking through this on a number of fronts. The Library Executive Group has done two of three retreats. And the third retreat is still to come. I'll talk about that in a minute. But out of these retreats, we did come up with some products, which I'm going to share here. We did a lot of other things, but we did spend some time on wordsmithing to bring you some ideas around how best to convey our message, to encapsulate this message. So our draft tagline, enhancing the life of the mind. Our draft vision statement, empowering Cornell's research and learning community with deep expertise, innovative services, and outstanding scholarly collections strengthened by strategic partnerships for all three of those things. And our draft mission statement. The mission statement is aspirational. It should be shorter. You should almost be able to roll it off your tongue. The mission statement is a little more long-lasting and should reflect what the essential role of the library is in the academy. And so here's our version of it. Cornell University Library promotes a culture of broad inquiry and supports the university's mission, and this is a quote from the university's mission, to discover, preserve, and disseminate knowledge and creative expression. It engages with the ongoing transformations of society to deliver world-class physical and digital content and services critical to research, education, and outreach now and in the future. The library acts globally, supporting Cornell's land-grant mission in New York State and beyond, and builds partnerships within and outside the university. It invests in staff expertise, deep collections, and physical and virtual libraries to serve as a neutral and trusted party supporting information access and scholarly communication. We can come back to those during the Q&A. But equally important to advancing our mission and vision is to execute the following initiatives by 2015 in order to develop the requisite infrastructure to succeed in these really, really transformative times. So, drum roll, here are five enabling infrastructure prerequisites and initiatives for advancing CEL and its strategic plan for the next couple of years. The first is to foster an innovative and collaborative staff culture. It's our number one step in advancing this plan. We will continue to provide outstanding services to the Cornell community, but we recognize that the circumstances under which we do that are rapidly changing. And able to do that, we need to simplify our decision-making process. We have to encourage staff to imagine new processes and procedures to support risk-taking and assign accountability at the appropriate level. We need to empower employees at all levels to make the decisions and reduce the need for senior-level approval of actions that really do not have system-wide impact. We'll strive to find that balance between an individual making a decision and decisions that require group discussion, including those decisions to discontinue certain services and streamline our processes in order to meet new challenges. Second, we will, by 2015, we must secure a sustainable institutional commitment to that partnership with Columbia and Cornell called Too Cool. We will continue to build collective collection capacity and enable that work by reconceding technical services operations across the two campuses, bolstered by a new technology and shared library management system. For it to succeed, we need to be able to do this. We must mainstream operations on behalf of Too Cool at both institutions, in the library staff, amongst faculty, students, and other researchers, and be supported directly and officially by the key leaders of each of those institutions. This partnership, you see that word over and over again in our language, is one of those important things, but we will broaden it and enhance deeper collaboration with other libraries, including those in BorrowDirect, IDIS Plus, New York State, Land Grant, and beyond. Third, the library must have in place a set of processes, policies, business models, and services to deal with the full range of digital information resources, which we are responsible for, and that mound of stuff that will be coming to us in the near future. We already have good processes in place for our physical materials, but we must have analogous ones for our digital content and services. And we need to streamline it. There are good efforts underway. Some of them are siloed, some of them are duplicated. We really need to rationalize and step back and reconstruct that whole suite of capabilities and services to manage an increasingly digital world. Four, we must create a dynamic and virtual presence for the full range of library services across the disciplines and with our user community. This is really expanding on the work we've been doing over the last couple of years. We need to continue to work with our users to explore both general and specialized needs, including personalization, collaboration, location-specific guidance, annotation, and other capabilities that we can't today imagine. Our virtual presence, customized by our users, will serve as the center for access, research, networking, and learning, both on and off campus in this digital environment. And finally, while this was not on our radar when the strategic plan was implemented, Cornell has been successful in the New York Tech campus, and it's coming. It's going to be there by 2017 on physical presence on Rhode Island, Roosevelt Island.
Ooh, I love that relation. Take it over Rhode Island.
The first students will come in the fall. The first students will be on site the following year. They're already hiring faculty and others. And we need to prepare and start preparing now to provide a 21st century information support environment for that campus through an extensive set of digital collections and innovative suite of services. This is a brand new type of campus. It is not going to be a replica of the Ithaca campus. We are engaging with businesses. We are engaging with partners, international partners. It will be an incubation place for new businesses and new technologies to support the vitality of New York City and beyond. And so we will need to think about how we support a community that will need to collaborate, to visualize, to stimulate, and share their inventions with each other in the world. We will partner with IT at Cornell, Student Services, Career Services, and others to assure that students, faculty, and researchers have the technology, the space, the tools, and the content they need to succeed in their work. Okay. So how are we going to do this, and how do those 7 goals, 10 priorities, and 5 initiatives all fit together? It can, for on the surface of it, seem like we're just adding more things and we're not taking things off. And indeed, the third retreat for the Library Executive Group, I think, will be the hardest, which is to really focus on that less with less idea. But this triangle is supposed to convey to you a sense of how we will do this in a very volatile, changing environment with new needs and new expectations coming out. Most of our work and most of your daily work is focused on mainstream programs and services that we provide to our Cornell community and beyond. These will change. They have been changing over time. But this is where we really focus our efforts, and this is what makes the library an excellent place. But as we have new issues coming up, the projects and initiatives space in this triangle. This is where we look at promising things, such as in the priority objectives, how we codify things, how we define them, how we develop the sort of protocols and policies and procedures and steps for mainstreaming those programs and services. They don't go over the wall until they've been through that kind of process. And not every project or every initiative will make it over the wall into mainstream programs and services. Where do you want to be in the mainstream programs and services? At the very top is we're an innovative culture. We have lots of new things coming down the pipe. We need to experiment. We need to fail successfully. We need to succeed in some things. This is an area where we sort of incubate ideas. Many of them will not make it into projects or initiatives, but they will help us learn as we think through alternative ways of doing stuff. So some of the experimentation will make it into the projects and initiatives domain. Many of the projects and initiatives will make it into our mainstream programs and services. But the laws of physics apply. As more things come in, things have to drop off at the bottom. And that's the rub. That's where we need to focus our attention. We've done a lot of thinking through our aspirations and steps to get us there, but how do we actually do it, given the restraint and resources that we face? So the less of less issue is the big elephant in the room that we're going to have to address. As I mentioned, it will be the third one of our leg retreat, and Ed will need a lot of time for that retreat. I love the idea of the manager's council's suggestion that the library convene a conversation on how to do less with less. And I will look forward to how manager's council wants to do that, but I think it's an excellent thing to do. Third, I think that brainstorming ought to occur at each library, each unit, and each group. And perhaps starting with, will the sky fall if we stop doing X or Y? Or will the sky still stay up there if we modify the way we go about doing X or Y? Let's finish up here before opening this up to questions on an update on the budget. And I'm glad to see Lee there, so any questions about the budget will be directed to that man in the back. This is our fiscal year we're going into, FY 12-13. Like all colleges and academic units and administrative units on campus, this is the last hard year for the university in terms of trying to find budget equilibrium. So we were all assigned, quote, administrative streamlining savings, IT, procurement, facility spans and layers, and the price tag for Cornell Library was $1 million. We were now aligned with other schools and colleges and academic units, and I'll stress that. It's an equal opportunity for people to suffer. We have identified through savings, unfulfilled positions and some IT-related savings, $700,000 of that $1 million. And for this year, FY13, we're covering the remaining $300,000 out of one-time savings. No layoffs will be required. We will, however, have an ongoing structural deficit of $300,000, which we need to eliminate. And our goal is to eliminate that by 2015 through a combination of increasing our revenues, reducing our costs through greater efficiencies and effectiveness, and to rely on the savings that come in through normal attrition processes. I want to point out again, I think I mentioned it, that while the library, as we compare it to ARL College, has been dropping in terms of collection support, we've actually been over higher on that list in terms of support for staff. And at this point, at 49% of our total expenditures, we're on par with our peers among the top 20. For those collections, mentioned one-time support has come from our reserves, fundraising, and the provost kicked in that $300,000. We've also carved out ongoing support to help bridge the widening gap. And I think a really key thing for me this year to focus my attention on is making the case for additional funding coming from the university in terms of ongoing institutional investment. If we don't have that, it doesn't really matter what the library does. We will continue to fall behind. In terms of contracting hotels, Mann Library got an $81,000 reduction, which they will need without a layout, but those savings will be identified in April. Catherwood Hospitality and Management are in their first year of merge operation, and so there was really no significant change from the planning assumptions that drove it forward. There is potential for increase in collections funding from ILR, and that has no change from last year. You've heard about the university budget model, at least that there's something underway there, and it is to be developed, to be implemented by next fiscal year, FY14. So what's going on right now is there's a group of cross-cutting teams working on various modeling assumptions, taking FY13's budget and looking at it in terms of distribution in new ways. The provost, and Lee Cartnell is representing us on one of those groups, the provost has asked us to consider the impact of a single budget for the Ithaca campus that would be administered by the university librarian through the library directors and in concert with the college deans. Most of the library costs would be distributed then to those colleges and schools through an allocation method that will be based on the number of faculty and students. And it will be an expansion of that CAM charge, the cost allocation methodology charge, because the provost and the respective deans in hotel and in the statutory side will no longer directly fund library operations. It will all be through this process of a CAM charge. Additional costs also have to be factored in because the provost is going to push out to each of the units their costs for facilities and utilities and fundraising that had previously been supported by the provost for the central library. But those will not be charged to the library, and likely much of that will be reallocated into those CAM charges as well. Our sources of revenue will primarily then be the CAM charges paid by those colleges. We have endowments. We will get the indirect costs on any of the library grants. They will remain with the library rather than being scarfed up. But those are essentially the sources of funds for the library moving forward. This is a lot of ground I've covered. I've left 40 minutes for questions and comments and observations about what's going on. And I hope you won't be shy. We had a good discussion yesterday. You don't want to be shown up by your colleagues who came to the studio. So I would like to open the floor for observations, comments, anything, questions you might have. Yes, Glenn?
Last one that you showed about the CAM model,
yeah.
I don't really understand that. I don't understand that. And I don't understand, you know, what the college is paying money for library would look like. Can you just talk about what that is?
I will not, but the man in the back, Lee Cartnell, as Glenn doesn't understand the CAM charging business, what does that look like? What does it mean? Is that correct, Glenn?
Yeah.
I don't like to give too much information in the future further. Currently, the campus is a way for central costs to be distributed to the colleges, particularly in the current situation, current model contract hotel and the tunnels. So that the central costs are supported by nutrition members and so forth. Get distributed to the colleges who pay the bills and we return funds to the center, if you will. The library central administrative costs are currently part of that PM. So I left it charged to the colleges to go back to the provost, if you will, to help fund the general purpose budget, which is now the main source of our revenue, and which would go away in the model. So in the new PM, all library costs, not just the central costs, but tech services, IT, and administration, but the cost of all the libraries, the operating costs of the libraries, the cost of materials, basically all costs, will now be distributed to the colleges because the provost won't have a central fund anymore to fund the libraries. It will all now become directly from the colleges. So those costs will be distributed, as Dan said, to the colleges based on the appropriate share of student and faculty numbers. In addition to those direct costs of operating the library, those are now the contract library, the endowed library, the hotel, all libraries, those costs are going to get distributed to the colleges won't pay their share. In addition to that, the facilities cost, for example, that will be charged to the library will also be passed on to the colleges. So in addition to our direct costs, there'll be the indirect costs of facilities that will be passed on to the colleges as well. So that now becomes the main source of funding for the library budget. That's the money we're going to get back from the colleges. Well, the general purpose budget goes away. You no longer get any money from the provost. We get it all through the colleges, and hence the need to develop a budget in concert with the dean who will be paying for those costs and supply that money directly from the library. Short, hopefully explains a little better. It's pretty complicated. This whole model changes almost weekly. I've got a meeting Thursday with the budget office to talk about more details. And we say we hope for the next month or so to have a model that can be shared with the dean so they see the bottom line, how it impacts their college. Remember, the library is just one little piece of this whole model. So, a college may pay less for library services, but more for other services, and all comes down to the bottom line and how they I think the plan is to smooth have a transition if necessary so that there's not a big change in the first year that this model will be effective. But clearly, there will be change. Some to receive more resources, some will receive less resources. But all the details of that are long way from being in terms of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this now suggests to me that there would have to be some direct alignment between library units and colleges, which may not exist at the moment. It's formalized. Yeah, for example, Olin Burris, granted the subject material that we collect is primarily interested in the College of Arts and Sciences, we have a formal administrative connection to the College of Arts and Sciences. So if we have the fine arts there, they're allowed to use the College of Arts. Planning, although they do some for arts and science, does this mean that the libraries can now be assigned colleges if they don't already use the libraries?
No, I don't think they'll be assigned, but I think there'll be a much greater interest on the part of the deans as to what the library is doing. I mean, basically, the library has been a free good for the endowed colleges now. And now they're going to get a bill that says they're paying X to the library. So I think there'll be a different relationship with the colleges for sure than there has been in the past, particularly in down colleges.
But I think it's true, isn't it, that we aren't going to identify specific costs associated with Olin and Urus that will go to arts and science.
No, all of it
goes together, and then they will be apportioned a certain amount based on their number of faculty and students.
So likewise, the dean of Cal will not pay directly for Manhart. portion of all libraries based on their share of students and faculty. Hope that helps.
Any other questions for that man in the back about financial issues? Thank you. Okay.
I have a question a little bit. Like, I can see this potentially having some trickiness as far as collections. If a town or a larger school puts in a huge amount of money, I kind of wanted to sort of demand for that kind of money as far as collections. But say chemistry is collecting a smaller group of students, both of them are doing research, so much more expensive. How is that going to work out? I mean, I know it's kind of like we can see how it's going to work out, but.
Well, yeah, the question that you're asking focuses on collections support. You know, will it vary across the respective schools and colleges? I will fight that tooth and nail, because I don't want to have to negotiate with every dean about any specific aspect of it. We would be looking for some modification and smoothing, as Lee has suggested, but it's really got to be based on some kind of formula, because otherwise it's a retrenchment battle every time. So I think that rightfully the role and responsibility of John and the selectors is to define where the priorities are for funding collections. And our job is to provide them the resources to do that, and the dean's job too. Glenn?
I'm still just curious about the thinking behind it. Like, is this something that the provost thinks makes more sense? Is it just that, you know, they want to decentralize things and make the library more connected to the colleges? Like, what's the idea?
Well, the idea behind the whole new university budget model is to make it all more transparent. The provost wants to get out of the business funding things. He wants to have his pot of money to do provostial initiatives. So the idea is, and this came out of one of the reimagining recommendation teams, is to push out all the resources to the respective schools and colleges, but also push out to them all their expenses. So there would be sort of, quote, more of a responsible stewardship around those things. So, for instance, we'll inherit the utility costs for Olin and Annex and Eurus and
All libraries.
And the, you know, man libraries expenses, et cetera. Well, there will be some opportunity for us to be a little more frugal around how we use our electricity because we'll be paying the bill directly. So there's an incentive process in that too. But it's also part of this issue of transparency that the provost is very strongly supportive of. Any other questions about the budget? Yeah, John.
The challenge in an institution like this is very often how to promote university citizenship when each college sees its own needs, its own priorities, and so forth. On the face of this, it seems like it's going in the wrong direction that way, pushing more individual, decentralized viewpoints. But I'm sure that's not really the intent. So could you speak to how the reimagining efforts are leading toward university citizenship as opposed to just every club on its own bottom and every dean for its own direct advantage?
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting combination of both decentralization and centralization. That the university library, if the provost recommendation goes through, will have good control of all of the budgets, not their respective deans. Analogous in some ways to how the endowed libraries have been working. But if you look at the model of the state side or the touch side, there is a need to serve the constituency of, let's take Mann Library. It's not just Cal, and it's not just CHE that you serve. It's all the life sciences and the social sciences around those aspects. So you have a university mission as well. as a more narrowly defined school mission. I think it's also a recognition that the idea, in terms of the library, one school, it just doesn't work anymore. That was more of a physical construct. As we look at how things are borrowed across libraries and how students operate and how faculty operate, they're actually utilizing resources sort of independent of where they are in many cases. There's heavy use by the law school for Olin's resources or the Asia resources, and similar kinds of examples abound. So I think it is, in some ways, the provost trying to level the playing field so that everybody is being treated the same, so that the Tubbs, the contract schools, and the endowed side are all on a budget per se, that they need to live within their resources, and that they need to understand the things that they rely on have to be paid for. So it's an interesting model. I know there are going to be lots of problems with it. There's going to be a lot of moaning. There already is a lot of moaning. I think that there are, on the contract side, there are deans who are saying, yeah, you all ought to live under what we've been living on. And under the deans maybe on the endowed side are saying, oh, yeah, I'm probably delegating. I'm exaggerating here, but it will give a level playing field around how all of them operate. Yeah, Gary.
I'm trying to understand this concept of doing less with less.
Uh-huh, so
we are also moving into the top tier.
Okay.
It seems to be a contradiction. Thank you for your
attention. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm not sure I see it as a contradiction. I see it as one of our goals is to provide the kinds of tools that our faculty and students need. We've got, if you read any of the petition stuff from the faculty, there were lots of stories about how, we've fallen behind in the last 10 years. I'm not able to do the kind of research that I was able to do here or there. The faculty, that you get a third of the faculty signing this petition is extraordinary. They're speaking with their fingers in terms of their needs. We want to meet the needs of faculty, and we want to meet the needs of students. So it's a priority in the same way that building access to digital services, because that's the way the world is going. We've got to make it easier for people to find and use material. The funds, by and large, that are going to supporting the collections are not funds that would go towards supporting staff. The provost, frankly, is not going to give us any more money for staff. That they will, other than the increments that they're going to look at across the full university environment. He understands that there is a separate case around collections, and in many schools, the collections increment differentially than the rest of it. Our peers have been routinely getting between 5% and 8% annually in increases for their collections, and along the same kind of lines that we've been getting for staff. We've been getting zero. So the gap widens. The campaign for collections is something that is a percent of the overall fundraising goals that I have. It's not the whole thing. $7.5 million out of 19 to 20 million is earmarked. And the reallocation of our reserve resources, I wasn't real crazy about the extent of having to do that. There were things I wanted to do with those funds, such as upgrade Olin and Eurus and thinking about the Fine Arts Library and other things. But the provost, I think, in looking at our budget, sees here we are complaining about this, the faculty are complaining about this, you've got reserves, I want you to use them. So there is an acknowledgement that as more material comes in, it puts a constraint on staff. More and more of it, though, is coming in electronically, and it has its own set of challenges. So being able to have more folks in technical services with that kind of expertise, the things that we need now to do are different from the ones that we used to have to do in terms of collections coming in.
Yeah.
Follow up on that. I'm hearing the problems and I'm kind of hearing what we want to do with this type of question. But I'm still kind of trying to grasp in my head what we need to do on the ground.
Yeah.
In terms of your point earlier, the presentation about the discussions that are going to happen in the future with less and less. Are we thinking that this is going to be, let's increase efficiency in what we're doing now? Or are we thinking we should figure out where we're going to just eliminate services? Are you thinking in any particular way?
I think everything's on the table. I'm trying to think within my own way I do my job. Pushing down decisions at the appropriate level, I think is a really good thing. I don't need to sign off on lots of different things that are being decided. Most of the time I'm just signing my signature to something that is really well constructed, well conceived. I don't need to spend my time doing that. Okay, two minutes. I cut way back on the sort of professional work I do, that I see that as well as my advance Cornell outside of Cornell. It doesn't particularly advance Cornell within Cornell. I'm very, I go to Association of Research Libraries meetings because I learn a lot there around what is directly. I don't go to ALA or ACRL or any of those others that would be professional development for me rather than doing my job. I have really great Associate University librarian colleagues I work with. We do not think that with one mind. That is a fertile environment in which things get done. Particularly if I have two AULs who come with an idea and let's hope that it sounds good. So I don't know if they'll have to speak for themselves. I do not micromanage the AUL work at all. And that's been quite free in terms of the sort of time I have to work. Thinking for working with deans, working, I really need to spend about 30% of my time on fundraising for this campaign to be a success. So I need a couple of days, or matters, on that per week that I ought to be focusing on. That's what I've got to raise up that amount. So I can reflect myself in terms of how I spend my time, but we can also start to think through, is the sky going to fall if we stop doing, I don't know, X, Y, or Z? I don't want to pick on anybody here because they'll say, wait a minute. I think it can be also a breathing exercise to think through, because something's got to give. Dean?
Yeah, I can give an example from the IT area. We previously ran our own data centers and hardware systems and servers for ourselves and ourselves. And that gave us a level of control that was comforting, but it turned out it was pretty expensive. I mean, a chunk of the $700,000 in savings came out of the fact that we are no longer budgeting for these very high-priced servers and the support that goes with them. Instead, we're using the university's virtual machine services. So we managed to sort of find the efficiency there and do less with less in that specific area. I think we keep looking for efficiency like that. Where are we doing things where we're not sort of incredibly adding value for the university provider or something? Where is there something we could push off to a cloud service or somebody else or a collaboration with other people?
More with less, same with less, that sort of seems to have a positive connotation.
organization where it's less and less seen to communicate, at least to me, that we're looking to basically provide less service than we were before. Is that the intent to the phrase?
But it reminds me of the joke about when I used to go to Cuba. You keep the workers, pretend to work, and the government pretends to pay them. Sort of less with less is not a good way of stating the thing. I think what it means is we can't take on another full-time job while we're doing. We should put in a good full-time job, but what we do in that full-time job has got to change because the number of people who are actually doing those jobs within the library is down 15%. So something's got to give. We can't just stay with what we're currently doing because there are new demands and new expectations that we need to address. So there needs to be workload balance. There needs to be a sense of commitment and seeing the vision of where we're going. There needs to be a willingness to think again about how we do stuff. I mean, I have my own pet things. Gwen knows I love to take a pencil to anything that comes out of communication. And you know, they expect it. Yeah, I got to let go of that and stop doing it. Because what they produce is really high quality. I'm not promising, but I'm acknowledging the issue. I'm acknowledging the issue. So yeah, less with less. More with less sounds like, you know, we're going to work 80,000 hours a week. We're going to work differently to meet challenges. And we're going to build something. We have to build something.
Completely different tack. Is there any likely involvement or collaboration with the Technion in the provision of the library for the tech campus?
There will certainly be something that needs to be investigated. There's a whole slew of things. Potential partnerships with NYU for while they're still at the Google building, and also NYTL because of their rich collections, and they also have a public library over there. In terms of Technion, there's a whole range of complications around licensing arrangements that we're going to have to deal with. This is probably going to be identified as another campus. That whole physical location is sort of anathema to digital access in my mind, but those will be fine. And then compounded with, these filthy businessmen and entrepreneurs who would want to have access to that. And we get, believe it or not, deep discounts to all of that scholarship. Once you become profit makers, they want to charge out of the zoo. And then, by the way, you have a foreigner who's working with you in this area. That's a totally different beast. So there's lots of complications around that. Technion is important. Our primary goal, however, is to serve the Cornell community there. And those two are not synonymous. New York Tech is not synonymous with Technion.
Eric? Yeah, this is one of the positives. When I heard this issue about staff recognition, we also include librarians. Because, for example, when I look at the leadership that some librarians show, I wonder if they do have recognition that they could come, for example, I pick up the person that should have used to be a Marine Corps. And around that, I thought it was outstanding. So I'm wondering, when we're talking about staff recognition, are we also talking about
it? Absolutely. And, I think we need to be more creative about how we acknowledge, publicly acknowledge and reward good work across a whole range of things. I have one donor potentially who would fund a monetary reward for staff librarians in the same way that there is Christian Walton under the staff recognition award. Outstanding performance award. That will be that one, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Word?
You now escape me now.
Yeah.
Sure.
The amount that we spend on digital at this inching at night, inching at media, is now about, what, 62% of our overall budget for collections is spent on digital content. We will continue to buy physical monographs. We buy very few physical journals. I'm going to turn this over to John because he's raising his hand saying, "Treating troubled waters."
I was just going to say that I think it's in line with your idea of making decisions at the executive level. Because when we allocate preference funds, we don't say this is for electronic and this is for print. The selector has the decision making to working with their faculty and users to decide, you know, what they need. So I think it's we can't be pushing the decision to the appropriate levels. Rather than you saying we're going to spend, or me saying we're going to spend, we're saying we're going to spend.
But I think the trajectory as we looked at the way, and it's not just Cornell, all ARO libraries have doubled the amount that they've been spending on electronic resources within the last 6 or 7 years. It's a pretty amazing price increase there.
But I think we do that here based on the decision.
Absolutely. Well, and more stuff is going digital. Yes.
How do you envision the decision-making process for services that we may need to drop off to enable the innovation? The little arrows moving off the bottom of the triangle.
Mm-hmm. I like that little squiggly arrows.
Yeah, I think it's very good that the people who have direct contact with our patrons, stakeholders, really understand the value of the service.
I think it will be a process of sort of ground floor discussions that you and Cornelia and Deb and the rest of your colleagues will have around what really works, what is a useful but probably can be minimized, and where are the gaps in the support for faculty and other researchers that we are just not seeing. Some ideas will follow up around those issues. There will be other such discussions that will go on with your counterparts at other libraries. Potentially, I'm just making this up, but potentially there would be one where there is a brainstorming session with public service or library liaisons to sort of look at what's possible or amongst these priorities, which is the one we will emphasize this year, is a sort of an enabling approach that moves toward other things. I don't have any preconceived ideas in my mind about it. I think it's something that we will all want to think about. Inevitably, it's tough to imagine doing something else. As I pointed out, there are things that I don't want to give up doing, even if it means I have to work longer hours and support when it comes for it. But, in the big scheme of things, she's a pretty darn good writer, and much I am, and let go with it. But I think, you all are going to have to come up with ideas around how to think through the gaps, the really important things where perhaps the service is, I go back to those radar charts that showed through the LifeQual survey that showed more than adequate support for X, Y, or Z, less support for non-existent support in those quarters. How do you kind of move back to compensate for those.
Putting that in the other,
yeah.
The structure, you mentioned that some of the allocations around the number of faculties from library or college, are other numbers that you could imagine grant money that funded to the college?
There are a bunch of different models that are out there.
And as we looked at those, we decided a more equitable way of looking at that would be based on the faculty and students. Some colleges thrive on research money coming in. Some do not. Their library resource needs could be comparable, however. So, you know, that sort of heavy skewing by that, you know, say in the sciences, may disenfranchise those in the humanities. So it's number of faculty and number of students. There will be some smoothing, however, that will go on. And we can imagine that the course set of services will be X. If you want something on top of that, which is very tailored service, that school or college may be asked to pay for it. Got you for 7 more minutes. I want to ask you about these next steps in advancing the plan. Comments, questions about them, how we derive them. We really try to get them sized because I think we're really mindful of some of the responses in the survey saying there's way too many things going on. And I think 5 is just a good number. It fits on one hand. You know, after 5, you get to 6, then what you're seeing is 2 threes. 5, I can imagine. I don't make it 2s. Never mind, you don't. So, comments? Observations? Anything you want to weigh in on? There'll be plenty of other opportunities to do so as a first take. Yeah, Margaret? Yeah, we will build on the work that has gone on in the first 2 priority teams. It's an issue that Managers Council is very much conscious of in terms of the surveys and the listening sessions. It's why it's in the project's initiative phase. This is where we codify, define, develop, you know, steps to do that. It is a goal we've had for a long time. I would not say it has made it into the mainstream function. So we will be looking for great ideas about how to do that. I think some of the initial steps is trying to streamline. You know, it can be a frustrating environment to work where there are a gazillion sign-offs on something that you're doing, or something falls in between 2 committees, or maybe both committees are looking at it and they've come to radically different conclusions. That streamlining of our decision-making culture, I think, is one thing. Letting voices rise around new ways of doing things. Nancy raised the issue of how do we decide, you know, what to give up and what to add. That comes best from people who are working on the ground. You know, I would be interested in seeing maybe across the most efficient idea that moves us forward. Other comments? Does she look okay to you? Yes. I imagine imagine our group that will be charged pretty soon, probably in September, identifying the requisite resources to provide the services that will be necessary. That bill will go to the provost, the vice provost, Dan Hutton-Locker. This is what it's going to cost. I'm sure there'll be some pushback, but it is not going to be funded out of our current budget, the Ithaca Basin budget. And that's been promised. It's just not going to happen. Any last comments before I let you go? Thank you all for coming. Let me know if you have observations, not in the middle of the night, but I mean, if you have them in the middle of the night, send me an email. And enjoy the rest of the summer.